The firm of Harris and Meringue. Patrick Harris,
look, Daniel, I do what I want.
Danny Meringue.
That is smelling your own farts.
Easy there. These are great pipes.
I'm not going to say agree to disagree, but I really don't like you right now.
The firm of Harris and Meringue on the Fan Sports Network, 105.1 and 1080, The Fan.
All right, final hour to go here. The firm of Harris and Meringue, Portland sports leader, 105.1, The Fan. Don't you forget it. Coming up at 1, you'll have Ducks Insider with Joey Mack from 1 to 2. The Fan Happy Hour with Luke Anderson from 2 to 3, and then Primetime, 3 to 7, to take you all the way home and finish out 13 hours of continuous local sports coverage. On tomorrow's show, we'll have Ryan Clark on, preview the Oregon State football season. So if you're a Beav fan, stick around for that, as Malik Murphy has been named QB1, to the shock of all of us. So there's a lot of fun to unpack there. Over on the YouTube chat, Cam Newton looks like he lives every day like he's a chick at the Kentucky Derby.
I mean, yeah.
Clinton Portis lived that life a little bit, too.
You know,
I liked his glasses selection.
Oh, yeah. It's the Johnny Depp, Matt Hatter collection.
Yes, yes. Who did it better, Clinton Portis or Cam Newton? I always thought Portis had baller sunglasses. And as a sunglass guy...
Now you're a sunglass guy.
Well, I am. Mm. Well, that's why I was concerned. I was very, very concerned. Mm-hmm. I was very, very concerned. Yeah, so that's what you got to look forward to. I think I noticed this as well. We'll preview Washington State on Friday. Alex Brink, former quarterback, he'll join us as well. We'll talk a little basketball tomorrow, maybe. Get you a little fingers wet there a little bit.
Oh.
Mostly let you wax poetic on how much you are going to hate NBA start times.
Yeah, not.
And we'll do a Tears Day on Thursday, which we always do.
Indeed.
That'll be fun.
It's the simple things in life.
We're waiting on Dave Bartu to join us. Rusty over there is working hard on the phone line, so we'll grab him when we can. Looking around in college football here, we've got... You got him? All right. We bring on from College Football Matrix the one, the only, Dave Bartu. And Dave, I don't know if you've seen this Cam Newton thing that went around talking about Bear Bachmeyer, but can a quarterback be successful wearing number 47?
Can a quarterback be... What are you talking about?
Well, I mean, it's just untraditional.
Dude, people who think numbers on a jersey have an effect on the game also turn off the game and walk away thinking their presence is affecting it. Stop it.
Is this like if I turn the game off, my team will score a touchdown, like I'm the bad luck?
Exactly. Don't be a moron. Don't be that guy. Don't be that guy.
Bartu, we got college football officially getting underway this week, 0 week. What do we have to kind of look forward to? Give us be our sommelier as far as our taster of 0 week and what we should look forward to, or if there's anything important coming out of this week that we should kind of keep our eyes on.
No, I don't think there's anything important in 0 week or anything like that. It's kind of week over week. But in the first couple of weeks, though, I think one of the things you have to watch for is, and this is a really simple trick, is margin of victory.
Mm-hmm.
It is the single most important metric for the quality of a team, not strength of schedule. You know, you can go to recruiting, which is your number one correlation. But if you have a team that is picked to win a lot of football games and they are struggling early with margin of victory, that's not a good sign. Okay. And I'm not saying it's universal, because as we know, Oregon struggled last year, Idaho, Boise State, tight ball games. But they were kind of an anomaly being able to pull out of that so-called tailspin. They still got the W's, but most teams, that are your national championship contenders, they finished the regular season in the top three of offense and defensive scoring efficiency, which is essentially margin of victory. Top three. Your last 25 national champions are top three in offense and or defense margin of victory at the end of the regular season. So that's why I say people say these September games don't count. They absolutely do. But I think the biggest harbinger that they bring is the quality of that team to compete on the upper level, either for a conference title or for a playoff position. These are all really good scoring efficiency teams.
Dave, looking over, let's slide over to the B1G, the Big Ten here for a second. And Danny and I kind of talk about this a lot coming in this college football season. And I think there's no conference that better says it than the B1G or maybe the Big 12 as well. And that's parity. Do you see the Big Ten playing out parity wise with a kind of this three-way tie at the top that we're not quite sure who will actually poke through? Everybody's got questions, and seemingly Penn State's only question is can they pull it off? But you got quarterback situations at Ohio State and Oregon. Do you see that kind of three-team landscape, or do you expect one of them to pull ahead?
Yeah, I expect a three-team landscape, but, oh, man, way to tee up allowing me to be a contrarian on your show. I don't think there is a damn thing about parity in the Big Ten.
Really?
You are talking about teams. Oregon and Ohio State are top 10 recruiters, okay? Michigan and Penn State are top 20 recruiters, okay? Iowa is barely a top 30 recruiter. You have recruiters in the 40s and 50s and 60s. There is talent all over the board. Now, the parity is good coaching quality, okay? But from a talent standpoint, I don't think there's a lot of parity in the Big Ten. I'll give you the Big 12. They don't have one damn top 25 recruiter. Not one, right? They're all between 25 and 50. That is a coach's league, 100%. I think we see a lot of volatility there. But from the Big Ten standpoint, tell me why we would ever talk about in the next 5 to 10 years, why would we ever foresee really seriously talking about anybody but Penn State, Oregon, Ohio State, maybe Michigan, maybe USC, you know, maybe Washington once in a while? I mean, you know, your top four or five recruiters are going to win the vast majority of the football games, you know? So I think when you talk like Illinois or Iowa contending this year, it's a cute little story. It's kind of fun, right? Woo, we get to involve them in the conversation. But the Big Ten is extraordinarily top heavy, and we are always going to be talking about Oregon, Michigan, Penn State, and Ohio State as the championship contenders from now until they realign.
When you look at not only just the parity landscape, but we are finally out of the COVID era, the long term holdovers. Is there anything that you're looking at that changed or programs have kind of adapted to, whether it be transfer portal, development, retention, anything along those lines that kind of became stronger indicators now that you don't have guys that are 5 and 6 and 7 year guys that kind of work as kind of flagpoles to be a little bit divergent off of?
Right. We don't have the Bo Nix. We don't have the Dylan Gabriel with, you know, 6,000 snaps. Mm-hmm. You know, we got the Dante Moores now. And look across the college landscape. I mean, is there a good quarterback out there? I mean, a really good one that you go, wow, this guy's awesome. And there really isn't. I think quarterback play, at least for this year, is down. My number one is still Leavitt at Arizona State because, like Justin Herbert, he's making Marcus Arroyo look brilliant. And only an NFL quarterback seemingly could do that. But I do believe what you're saying, coaching and player continuity, I think is very important. Being able to keep and look what Oregon has done with their player continuity. They don't go into the portal much, right? They've been a very, very consistent team. In fact, last year, your semifinal teams, okay, your Texas, your Ohio State, Penn State, you take those four semifinal teams. The year before, so the start of the season, those four teams had 30 transfers total come in, 30, 7.5 per team. So I think there's something to be said for a team's ability to mine high school talent, identify it. I think that's probably the most difficult thing right now for a program is identifying the long-term guys that you want to try to sign and keep long-term. I think that's the biggest trick in the game right now. But I'm seeing a lot of success in your, especially your upper programs that have player continuity. I think that's a really big part of it. I think the downside to it, though, is I don't think the level of football is ever going to be what it once was. You know, this year's national title team, I think would get smoked by anybody the last 25 years, you know, because there's not the player continuity. There's not the balance. There's not the commitment. The players, I mean, even Kirby Smart, SEC Media Days, these guys don't work as hard. They don't focus as hard. I think college football as a whole, as much as fans love seeing the players getting paid for what they do, I think the quality and overall commitment of in the entire college football network is down.
Dave Bartu joins us from College Football Matrix. We'll take a quick break and keep you on with us since you said you got the time. We come back, we'll chat a little. You were talking quarterbacks there, which tends to lead to Heisman. Can somebody win a Heisman that's not a quarterback? Maybe we'll get some betting angles from you and some dark horses. So stick with us. Dave Bartu staying with us. One more segment here. The Firm of Harris and Morang, 105.1 The Fan. All right, Dave Bartu from College Football Matrix hanging out with us for one more segue here. Thank you, friend, as always. You brought up an interesting note that you said kind of as we were going into the break about why college teams going forward would get the floor mopped. To use by previous teams, to use last year as an example, that's probably why we see Ohio State, who lost to Oregon, lost to Michigan, absolutely completely stomped the doors off Oregon on their way to looking pretty good all the way to a natty. That it's not going to be necessarily the top team every year.
No. Well, you know something. Here's the thing, though. Remember how I said the national champion is top three in offense and or top three in defensive scoring efficiency?
Yes.
Ohio State was number one in defensive scoring efficiency going into the playoffs. Do you know who was number two? Notre Dame. Number three, Texas. Right? I mean, the only anomaly in that semifinal, I was sitting there going, I wonder if this trend is ever going to be broken, because they have to be, right? So somebody's got to come out of nowhere. But
law of averages, yeah.
Right, 132 teams. At the end of the regular season, you're telling me there's only three competitors, offense and defense, at the end of the regular season? Yeah, and it's been like that for 25 years. I thought this year was going to be the one when it was broken. And it would have been if we still had the BCS or we still had four teams, because Ohio State wouldn't have got in.
Right.
But, you know, we ended up with the top three scoring efficiency defenses in the semifinal. So I think what the expanded playoff does is it allows, like we said, it allows for more mistakes by the really good teams. And Ohio State was obviously a clear beneficiary of that.
When we look at this season, when we just kind of look at seasons going forward in general, looking at Vegas and the win totals across the board, there really doesn't seem to be, like you said, there's that I don't want to use the word parity, but it's the odds are flattened as it appears for what you're looking at win totals across. You know, in the Big Ten, I believe the highest line is 10.5, and it's the same for the SEC. When you're looking at win totals right now of those teams that are kind of projected to be in that top 10, top 15 area, which of those teams are face the most volatility kind of going into this season, where they could easily surpass those lines and run away, and the teams that have a real chance of underperforming?
Well, you know, I don't know about you, but lines like 10.5 for Ohio State, Oregon, Penn State, I'm not messing with those. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of room there. I will agree with you, though, on somewhat of a flattening, especially in the SEC, because you got a bunch of teams at 9.5 wins for their total. Now, one of these reasons could be the overvaluing of the SEC as a whole. If you simply blind bet all 14 SEC teams 3 years ago, all 16 2 years ago, all 16 last year, right, or whatever it was, if you blindly bet the under total, you were up money every single year.
They all got to play each other.
Right, but Vegas is overvaluing the quality of the upper teams, I believe. Either that, or they're taking advantage of the SEC fans just betting the over every time, and they will do that. They'll bake in fake numbers because they know the public as a whole is going to take advantage of a hyped up team like a Georgia or a Texas or an Alabama. But yeah, we are seeing a flattening of it, a compression of it, and I think largely that has to do with we just don't have any runaway great teams anymore. I believe the system as a whole has been flattened. And the talent gaps have been shrunk, not only because of the transfer portal, but like I said before, I believe the motion and the work ethic is different now that the kids are getting paid some to a very large sum of money to play football. And I think psychologically that's affected outcomes as well.
You mentioned Sam Leavitt earlier at Arizona State. I like him as one of my favorite quarterbacks in college this year, along with John Mateer. That might be my wazoo bias showing on John Mateer. Who, when you look at Heisman situations, or maybe even two-part this with NFL comparisons, can Jeremiah Smith win this award for a Heisman, or is it still an NFL, or is it still a quarterback situation? And which one of these guys best translates to the NFL, do you think?
You know something? I don't know if Smith can win it. I mean, it's possible because there's just not a lot of flashy names out there as big as his. Rule number one, though, when you're betting the Heisman, if you don't see that team being a top 25 team, don't bet them.
Yeah.
You know, every Heisman is on a team that ends up in the top 25. Now, to me, your best Heisman is a guy that carries it to the top 25, like Lamar Jackson. Right? Like a Sam Leavitt, you know, who takes a team that recruits in the 40s and 50s and carries them to the top 25. That's to me the best kind of player. But with Jeremiah Smith, I think it's plausible simply because there's not too many big household names out there at quarterback, and most of them aren't very good. You know, I mean, you look at your big brands, new quarterback at Ohio State, new quarterback at Georgia, new quarterback at Alabama, Texas has a new quarterback and everybody knows his name, but I wouldn't be getting over my skis on that kid. So if you're going to bet the Heisman, make sure first and foremost it's going to be a team that you feel finishes in the top 25, but I'd still lean quarterbacks. It just feels like it has for far too long been a quarterback award.
I'm going to kind of put you on a spot here with some recent news. Auburn is now claiming the 2004 national title.
Uh-oh.
Do you, off the top of your head, know where Auburn versus USC fall in that 04 season as far as valuation ratings, things of that nature?
Dude, those USC teams, you know something? Here's another hot, spicy take. I think Pete Carroll massively underperformed the talent at USC when he was there. I think he massively underperformed. Dude, they only got one national title. That team had a core of starting NFL linebackers for like 17 years in a row. Mm-hmm. It was ridiculous. And the numbers they put up offense and defensively, I think Pete Carroll is actually closer to Steve Sarkisian. He was a guy who always let you down. Mm. He had all the talent in the world and never got the talent up to what it should have been. So, but comparing USC from 2000 to 2010 to, God, give me any Auburn team of this century. No, thank you. No, thank you.
Thank you, Dave.
I mean, USC had amazing scoring efficiency on offense. They had amazing scoring efficiency on defense. And I firmly believe the only guy that actually held them back was the head coach. He never won above talent, you know, and he always made weird decisions that cost them ball games. He cost them ball games at USC. And if there's any Seahawks fans listening, you know he might have cost them a Super Bowl title with weird decisions.
Any crazy teams that could sneak into the playoff in your mind?
Crazy teams. Okay. I don't know if they're crazy in so much as I think there's a lot of opportunity. And so what I look at is I'm looking for teams with easy schedules relative to their talent. Okay. Mm-hmm. And one of them is Texas Tech out of the Big 12. I like I said, I think the Big 12 is always going to be volatile. But when you look at that Texas, if you're a Duck fan, go look at that Texas Tech schedule. You're just like, dude, that's 12-0. We're done. Thanks for playing. Right? I mean, you don't play one single top 25 recruiter on the entire schedule. Texas Tech has the second largest gap of recruited and transfer portal talent to the schedule. So this is a team that factors, in my opinion, has a very, very high ceiling. They've upgraded their offensive coordinator. They have a very, very good defensive coordinator. Jury's still out on how good the head coach is. One guy that we talk about a lot, Bill Belichick, North Carolina. You want to talk about a really easy schedule. It's funny. Indiana wins, and everybody complains about their schedule. Dude, if North Carolina wins, people are going to lose their mind. It is literally the easiest schedule relative to talent in the entire country. Anything less than 10 wins is an absolute underperform. Bill Belichick, if he's that good, he could put this team in the playoffs. But I will go the opposite way. If he finishes 8-4 or worse and absolutely blows the schedule like Mac Brown did last year, Bill Belichick won't even make it to year 4. I think that's your biggest hot cold team of the entire country this year is that North Carolina Tar Heel team.
Oh, it's a bummer nobody would be paying attention to that guy and that guy coaching there, right? We were texting back and forth, and you were talking about things that you're looking forward to in the college football season, and one of the things that you factored in there was opponent behavior. What are you looking for in when you're looking at those kind of metrics?
Well, you know, so we got week one coming up, right? And here's one of the things. I have been working with training an AI agent to project play behavior, play-by-play behavior. So one of the things that I did, so for example, is I asked it this morning to give me a play-by-play breakdown in the first quarter.
Oh, did we lose him?
And so it gave me, okay, run pass percentages. And then I said, okay, now break it up by down and distance. Now break it up by home and road. Now break it up by field position, right? Inside the red zone, outside the red zone, midfield, etc. You know, and then break it down by score. And so, because what we're looking for is we're trying to find the ability to change a single drive, right? Because most college football games are double digits. They're not competitive. But we're just trying to change that drive. So one of the most interesting things that I found out about this one is this particular team in 2024 as an underdog on the road, okay, when they got in the red zone, they ran the ball 73% of the time. They got super, super, super conservative on all downs and distances in the red zone. So if that is replicated, this is an opportunity for a defensive coordinator to show pass defense but play the run. And so it's little things like that that we're trying to dissect, and then I can update this with play-by-play data going forward. So if I was, let's say, feeding this to Oregon, I can give you tendencies by quarter and situational football instantly as soon as Sunday rolls around for the next game.
That's Dave Bartu, College Football Matrix. Thank you for joining us, my friend. We'll circle back and bring you on a little bit later. That sound fun?
Yo, dude, I'm right here in your backyard in Forest Grove. I'm at the high school right now. My wife's getting her classroom set up, so you guys call me anytime. I'm ready to roll.
You got it, brother. Thank you so much.
Appreciate you, Bartu.
Later.
That is Dave Bartu, College Football Matrix. Big friend of the entire station here. Yeah. A guy everybody loves around here. Funny, funny dude.
He's into so much, man. It's so cool. That last little bit, boy, my eyes lit up. And I was like, oh, now we're getting into like true projection type stuff. That's the kind of stuff that I nerd out on immediately.
Yeah, so there'll be plenty to look forward to with college football, especially coming up this weekend as the big games, Iowa State, Kansas State. We come back, we'll wrap up the last half hour of the show. We'll head to New Orleans, the only team without a starting quarterback in the NFL, plus closing arguments. We'll do a little extra college football, and then we'll send you on your way. That's the firm of Harris and Morang. But first, the big kahuna over there with sports.
You mind if I have some of your tasty beverage to wash this down?
You got bad intentions.
That was fun with Dave Bartu joining us from the College Football Matrix. We thank him for his time as we go into week 0. College football there. We'll slide over to some NFL right here. And remember, Football Talk on the Fan is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. That takes us to the great city of Nolens, where they are the last team to have named a starting quarterback for this NFL season. I'm curious, Danny, your thoughts.
Does it matter? No. No.
So, well, that's what I was getting to. So if things don't matter, would you rather roll out Spencer Rattler or Tyler Shuck?
Shuck. Rattler's god-awful. At least you have the idea that
Remember when Rattler was going to be this awesome college quarterback?
Again, he was like Justin Fields for me, where I'm just like, nope. Not interested, not buying it, not my Huckleberry. Just not, there's nothing there that's redemptive in a sense of like, yep, I want to see what he's got. Hard pass. And like with Rattler, I am no longer interested. It's like Daniel Jones. I am no longer interested.
I've seen what I need to see.
Shuck, he might suck. but he might be okay.
What if he's awesome?
Great. I doubt it, but it's kind of like the whole Anthony Richardson thing. It's like, and now we're getting leaks from his agent that there's not trust between Richardson and the organization, which, again, we were alluded to yesterday. I was like,
damn right, I'm the Colts. I think you kind of suck, bro.
Yeah, but, I mean, but like the idea of like it being more than just what the tape is. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
There had to be something else going on there. And I think like Spencer Rattler's tape sucks.
It's not great.
So just there's... I guess if you're just going, again, to go from the non-football side of things, if it's the vibes and guys really just, you know, they vibe with Rattler,
mm-hmm.
and you're doing it to keep the peace because, you know, guys like Rattler more than they like Shuck, fine. But, in the end, does it matter? No.
Yeah, I don't know if Shuck is the guy that you're, like, waiting to sit around and, I mean, obviously they like him if they took him in the second round.
The idea of him, though, he's a huge quarterback with a big arm, like, so
he also played at four schools in college.
Yeah, but I mean, it's
that's also today's world.
Well, I mean, four. I mean,
do we hold that? Four's a lot.
Four's a bit much.
Four's a lot.
Two, okay, three. I mean, Cam Ward.
Cam Ward played at three.
Yeah, like.
But I give Cam Ward a little bit of the benefit of the
doubt. It was going up.
He was failing up. Not failing up. No, he was succeeding. I'm being a jerk. Yeah. But yeah, one double A, two D1.
Two bigger teams programs in D1.
I don't blame him for leaving Incarnate Ward after his success.
If you're promoting up as opposed to going the Daniels, the USC quarterback that went four or five schools, ended up at a Rice. It's like,
you're
not working your way up. You know what I mean?
I think the best move here for them to do and have Spencer Rattler start is to ease into the season. I tend to be the guy that kind of says, if you think this is your future, throw him out there. Like, if I were the Colts, I would start Anthony Richardson. You know, I'm the Dirt Johnson believer that's the route to go. But maybe, you know, Kellen Moore's got a lot to deal with down there. There's a lot of questions on that roster across the board. Maybe you have the guy that's played enough or played some, let you kind of focus on everything else, knowing that your quarterback situation will need to be addressed in the future.
I mean, what situation doesn't need to be addressed for the Saints?
Has anybody been in a worse first-time head coach situation than Kellen Moore?
I don't know why you take that job.
Because he won a job?
Not that bad.
I mean, Lane Kiffin took the Raiders job, and that wasn't a good job.
No, but again, I think coach, like Ben Johnson's a perfect example. He could have taken a job last year.
Yeah, but that's a decent job.
But no, it wasn't. Like he ended up waiting on the Bears and figuring some stuff out, like... But the idea of like just if you're a hot coordinator, the likelihood of you falling off the face of the planet in a year is pretty low.
Yes, yes.
But if you're
not going to forget how to coordinate overnight.
But if you do, then you're probably not a head coach anyways.
Correct. Also correct, yes.
So like I'm of the mind if you're a coordinator and you're looking for your first time head, like Aaron Glenn taking the Jets job.
That's rough too,
brother,
dude.
Because I like Aaron Glenn. I think he's going to be a good coach. I think he's a great defensive coordinator. But again, I know somebody has to coach these teams. But if you're if you're one of the top three guys, which Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn, I think were like in the top three or top five guys who are next in line to be head coaches, I would not go to one of these organizations like the Jets or the Saints that have just been epic S shows forever outside of very defined eras.
But I mean, it's pretty clear why Aaron Glenn went to the Jets.
There's ties there, certainly.
He was a New York Jet.
Yeah. But again, you know what the S show is, though.
Well, and the thing is, though, is that not to say that that typically works out well, because a lot of times it doesn't, but...
My old girlfriend abused me. This new one abuses me. I'm going back to my old one.
Yeah. Like, Vrabel. Vrabel went to the Patriots and,
the most easy duh move ever, yeah.
But, like, as quote-unquote bad the Patriots were, there was at least signs of stuff, and Vrabel understands... craft and the dynamics at play.
New England's not a bad job.
No.
And I think at least Vrabel got his first stop out of the way before he went there.
Exactly, exactly. That gave him kind of the clout and the benefit, and everybody said, when Colin was on this station, he was one of the few things I agreed with him, that Vrabel was probably the best coach on the market. That's not a bad job. Ben Johnson waits. Chicago becomes a better job after that last year debacle. Yeah, you kind of let that 1 year kind of sit, you know.
And the Bears weren't willing to make the decision, all that. But also Vrabel, he in Tennessee, you know, gets into it with the GM. The GM ends up getting ousted because he's god awful at his job. And Vrabel's like, you know what? I'm going to go somewhere where I know the pecking order and the establishment, and I have a good relationship with the owner, that I don't have to deal with this stuff.
I have to imagine this is how I would look at it if I were Kellen Moore in New Orleans, these first time coaches and the
that no one cares. And did you have a decent runway?
No, it's that I don't. Everybody is expecting you to be the worst team in the NFL. I think it's going to be the Colts, despite having more talent. I think it's just a systematic dysfunction over there right now. But if you're Kellen Moore, you can't get worse than people already thinking you're the worst team in the NFL. So you're probably not going to get fired. They could go 0-17, and I don't think Kellen Moore gets fired. So therefore, you've got a year to figure out what the hell you have, and you at least have next year, and in theory, another year after that, to really try to begin to build something that you think might actually work.
Well, now, I would agree with that, except we have seen in the last couple of years where there is a chance where first-year guys get turfed.
It does happen.
If it goes poorly enough.
But I think you're looking at, like, institutional controls kind of stuff. Like you've lost the locker room. Like, right. You are publicly putting players on blast. I don't see Kellen Moore doing
that. The Nathaniel Hacketts of the world, yes. Where it's so bad, yes. You can't. Josh McDaniels, like those kind of things.
Kellen Moore is one of the most all-time winning quarterbacks in the history of college football. He has been a very wildly successful, although much.
And Nathaniel Hackett was also a highly touted coordinator when he got that job. You can't.
I think these guys are different. I see your point.
You can't look ahead and be like, I see this is going to be a dumpster fire where this guy's going to get canned in the first season. Nobody thought that with Nathaniel Hackett or anybody like that. It's that sometimes it just goes so poorly that you have no choice.
I mean, I thought it after week one.
Well, yes.
Legitimately.
Before the season.
But that game was so bad. That game against Seattle was so bad that I would just went, oh, sweet Jesus, this guy's going to get fired before week four.
I think Kellen Moore has worked with people that are really good at locker room stuff.
Mm.
You know, Sirianni, et cetera. I think he will be fine.
And not only
that. Do I think he'll turn this team around? Maybe not. They might be that bad, but I don't see him getting turfed afterwards.
But you also look at bad ownership. The Benson family, Gail Benson. And yeah. Like, the Saints don't care. I think it's
So go 0-17 and go get Arch Manning.
It's pretty evident of what they are.
Closing arguments coming up next. We'll wrap up shop. This is The Firm, 105.1 The Fan.
It's time for Easy Play. Brought to you by Home Z, making home improvement easy.
1-2. High fly ball. Deep left field. Simpson back. Trap. Wall. See ya. The ninth home run for the Yankees. They've tied the most that they have ever hit in a game in team history. And the Yankees with lucky 13, they're up 13-3.
That is Michael Kay on the Yes Network. Jose Caballero hits the home run to make it 9 of the game. You know who else hit a home run in that game? Aaron Judge.
Whose arm apparently isn't falling
off. That seems kind of fine to me.
I do love the name Caballero because in translation, it's like knight.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Caballero's like a great little player.
Caballero's like knight, horseman, whatever.
I thought it was just basically cowboy.
It's a nice little jaunt.
I thought it was basically just cowboy.
Still think the Yankees suck. This Easy Play brought to you by Home Z. Use Home Z's online calculator to estimate your project instantly. Make it easy. Call Home Z. That's HOMZE, HomeZ.com.
The Firm of Harris and Marang is wrapping up for the day.
You want answers?
Which means it's time for the closing arguments.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
On the Fan Sports Network.
You can't handle the truth!
105.1 and 1080, The Fan.
Great point on the text line, 503-864-6326. Kellen Moore is also not the one replacing Super Bowl champ and legend Sean Payton. He's going to replace Dennis Allen, the guy who replaced the legend. I do think that's fair. You get a little separation. Dennis Allen probably should have never been hired in the first place.
Well, you never
seen Dennis Allen in this situation.
You never want to be the guy that follows the legend unless you're like, you know, you're in Green Bay if you're Aaron Rodgers and then Jordan Love. It's like,
yeah.
Or if you're in Pittsburgh, it's, you know, the Chin and then Tomlin. You know, it's like, yeah, you know, between Cowher and Tomlin and good God, I'm blanking on his name.
Chuck Knoll,
thank you. When you've got three coaches over the span of 45 years, then sure. But when you're following the guy that's the most successful in your franchise's history. It's especially as a first timer, that's tough to live up to.
Speaking of the most successful in franchise history, that would be Nicholas Saban, the former head coach at the University of Louisiana State. I'm joking. Yeah. Alabama. Funny thing here, you put this across me because I didn't see this. Greg McElroy, former quarterback, national champion winner, Greg McElroy of the Alabama Crimson Tide, that he had a notable source that believed Nick Saban would eventually coach again.
Yeah, that came out of like right on the tail end of SEC media.
I think so, yeah. It was weeks ago.
It was the only thing that really came out of it. And Saban basically said if McElroy was still at Alabama, he would have got his ass beat for saying that.
Yep, quote, you know, I don't know where that came from. Greg McElroy played quarterback for us, and if he had done something like that when he was a player, he would have got his ass kicked. What, just talking about Saban?
Just putting things out there that...
Notable source.
Not even just that, but just like...
People are telling me.
Yeah, they're just putting stuff out there.
People are saying...
Especially...
I only have one notable source. It's Reddit. That's all I've got.
But I mean... Look, Saban is a guy that, you know, ruled with an iron fist. This is the guy that when he had recruiting, you know, recruits come in, they would come into his gigantic office and he would have his his college football title rings out in front of him. Just be like, yeah, that's what I do.
I mean, it's that Belichickian way without being so much a hard ass.
Yeah.
Just
check-ins at 3 o'clock. It's 2:55.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, exactly. Of just like, we run things around here. Very specifically.
Yeah.
Things are clean all the way down to the janitor, all the way up to me. Like, things are done correctly.
How much you want to bet a text or call was exchanged with McElroy after that?
I don't know. I mean, how much do you want to ask? I mean, they both work for ESPN, right? McElroy's ESPN?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah.
But I bet you Saban just lets him sit on it and stew.
I'll bet you Saban.
Or just leaves him on red.
Yeah. I'll bet you Saban's just like, I don't care, McElroy. Like,
He clearly does.
Well, yeah, but I think it's also like, I am Nick Saban, and you are trying to say that because you played for me, you know what I'm going to do? That's cute, kid. Go keep trying to be a media member. By the way, I just walked onto the College Game Day site, so you tell me how this is
going. And your podcast sucks.
Yeah, exactly. I haven't listened. I don't really care for Greg McElroy. I think he's a little part of that hot takey tree at ESPN. I think he's a little college football Kendrick Perkins for my liking.
I'm ambivalent. I neither tune in nor tune out.
If I see him on TV, I probably change the channel. That says tune out, right?
Yeah.
And it's just not my thing.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Again, I
know he's really smart. He was really highly touted when he was at Alabama for being a real smart guy.
Here's me being five toes down on somebody or something.
I think I discovered that I'm 10 toes.
There you go. Found one.
Yeah.
Found one. Hey! We found one!
We're growing here, folks. We're growing here. All right, that'll do it for us. Coming up next is Ducks Insider with Joey Mack from 1 to 2. Then we'll get the Fan Happy Hour with Luke Anderson from 2 to 3. And then Primetime, 3 to 7 to take you all the way home. Thanks for sticking around. We'll catch you tomorrow. Ryan Clark on to preview Oregon State football. For Danny Morang, that's Jeff Rust. I'm Patrick Harris. Go do something I would do.
Bye.
He got bad intentions.